the awesome bell, suckers. This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims of ComicsAlliance.com and elsewhere on the internet, and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and beat them up. And guess what, everybody? It's December! It's holiday time! Which means it's time for us to watch an absolutely awful Christmas movie. And on this episode, we're going to be watching the ABC Family Original, starring Mike the Miz Mizanin, real world star and current tag team champions of the WWE.
That was not a mistake. If you do not follow WWE, that Matt did not just make a mistake.
No, he
that
carries
is his designation.
He carries around both belts, while his stunt double Damian Mizdow has two replica belts.
We should get a little background on the Miz. I think
I said the Christmas Bounty, right?
You did say. Well, I don't know if you did or not. I don't know if you made it. We are watching the Christmas Bounty. It originally aired on ABC Family in 2013. It was meant to air in 2012 and did not for some reason. I don't know. So they put this one on the shelf for a year.
Here's some info about the movie before we get a little deeper into the Miz himself. It does not have a Wikipedia page.
That's surprising.
One thing about the Miz is that his current character in the WWE is that he is a Hollywood insider, that he is a Hollywood big shot.
He's a star.
He's a star who has a stunt double and constantly needs to protect his face, which he calls his moneymaker. The joke of that is that The Miz has been in, as far as I know, two movies.
Yeah, I believe he's been in two movies, one of which was made for ABC Family. The other was a direct-to-video WWE Films release.
The Christmas Bounty was on ABC Family.
Right.
And the direct-to-DVD one was The Marine 3.
Yes.
The third Marine film.
The third Marine film. I feel like he was in... Was he in two of those?
I think there's a fourth one. But his character on TV is this big superstar, and at least one of the two movies he's been in does not have a Wikipedia page.
Yes, yes. Which, I have to say, is great. I am actually kind of a big fan of The Miz, which is difficult.
I find him way more enjoyable than most fans of wrestling do, I think.
Yeah, I think that's about where I'm at with it.
He's great at being a shithead.
He is. The thing about The Miz is he was on The Real World. While on The Real World, expressed his desire to be a pro wrestler when he was a very young man. He is one of those dudes that is living their lifelong dream and doing well at it. Brandon Stroud posted a thing where he was like, hey, say what you want about The Miz, but he is almost certainly a future Hall of Famer. And then posted a link to the accomplishments section of his Wikipedia page. And he is a Grand Slam champion, Matt. He has held every active title in the WWE.
Now let's name them.
WWE champion.
WWE championship.
He's been world heavyweight champion.
Okay.
Intercontinental champion.
U.S. Tag team. And that's it, right? Those are all the titles.
Those are all the titles. Didn't he win Money in the Bank?
I believe he was a Money in the Bank winner.
He's a Money in the Bank winner. He's never won the Royal Rumble, but he has technically main evented WrestleMania.
That's right. At one of the worst WrestleMania main events, in which the winner of the WrestleMania main event match was not in it.
Yes.
Because by all accounts, The Rock won that main event.
Yeah, The Rock, who was not an active wrestler. I really enjoy seeing this guy who seems like a nice enough guy living out his dream. And the thing is, you can watch him work so hard to improve. If you've been watching over the course of his career, he did not start out good. And he got a lot better. He's not great. He still can't do a figure four.
Right. There was a whole thing where Ric Flair bestowed upon him the figure four leg lock. And he still can't do it. Damian Mizdow does a 20 times better, 100 times better figure four than The Miz does.
The thing is, Miz is as close to, like, you and me being a wrestler as it is possible to have. He is this dude who was a lifelong fan to, like, kind of, like, almost doesn't belong there. And I don't want to, like, I don't want to take that away. Like, that sounds rude. It sounds like I'm bagging on him, and I'm really not. But, like, he feels, in a lot of ways, more like a fan than a pro wrestler, even though he's been wrestling, like, a pro wrestler for years. The problem with that is that, again, I think I'm borrowing a phrase from Brandon Stroud, his natural charisma is really negative. Yes. He's, like, really, like, reflexively off-putting.
He is the absolute drizzling shits as a babyface.
Yeah, he, as a good guy, he doesn't work, which is weird, because he should be the most easy to empathize with character
he's
ever.
He's the ultimate underdog. He's the fan who became a wrestler.
Yes.
But he only works as a heel. And he is a great heel promo. An absolutely great heel promo.
He really is. So one of the things about him that really follows logically is that he's so happy to be there that he is up for doing anything. Like, I have listened to interviews with him where he has talked about any time they need a volunteer to go speak at a school or, any, you know, to do anything. He's up for it. Like, if you want somebody to do a commercial, he'll do the commercial. If you want somebody to be in a movie, he'll be in a movie. And a lot of guys don't want to do that stuff because it's not wrestling. You and I write about comics. I don't really like writing about stuff that's not comics, you know? The weird thing is he's so up for anything that he ends up being able to do this character where he's a Hollywood superstar. And he is the best right now that I think he has ever been. If my voice sounds weird, it's literally because I was yelling at him at a live show two nights ago.
So
just booing him with all my heart.
So this is Kismet that we are watching this movie. Now,
oh yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm excited.
Now, I should note that The Miz is not actually the star of this movie. He is not the lead actor in this movie, even though his face is the biggest on the poster. And he's on the poster twice. The lead character is actually Francia Reza's Tori Bell. And then there are other characters who seem to be in it more than The Miz, too. But he is the face that sells the movie
This was a WWE Films production. So, and again, they have made, like, a lot of movies that don't necessarily star wrestlers. Like, they had that one with Halle Berry, where she was, like, a 911 operator.
Right.
But I think
the Kane horror movies don't actually star Kane.
Yeah. Talking about Jabe Goodnight?
Yeah. He's the killer. He's not the star.
This is going to be a weird one.
We talked a lot about The Miz. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about The Miz after we watch the movie. But before we get started, I do want to read one user review of the movie from IMDb. Also of note, there's no trivia section for this movie on IMDb. Even though I'm sure a lot of people watched this, right? It was on ABC Family. You would have to think hundreds of thousands of people watched this movie at least.
There is no one who would is more of a target audience for a Christmas movie starring not just a pro wrestler but Mike the Miz Mizanin than me, and I did not watch it on ABC Family.
Fair enough. But here's a review of The Christmas Bounty on IMDb. It is the featured review.
Oh, okay.
The headline is "Eye Candy for Both the Guys and Gals."
Oh, yeah.
The movie Christmas Bounty is for those who like lots of action and for those who are 13 and older. Christmas Bounty.
Okay, check and check.
Christmas Bounty has little to do with Christmas except it is happening during the Christmas season, like Die Hard. I added the like Die Hard part. That's not part of the review. It could be placed at any time of year.
This is a Shane Black movie, right? Shane Black's The Christmas Bounty?
There is no Christmas magic. That's sad. The movie will also put a smile on your face during its comedic scenes. There is eye candy for both the guys and gals, reiterating the headline. Mostly the guys, as the lead and many of the supporting actresses are, quote, hottie. The action in this film helps to maintain
Wait. Not hotties, but no. They are collectively hottie?
Hottie. Hottie not, is not an being adjective. Used as an adjective here.
Okay.
Check the adjective. Hottie. The action in this film helps to maintain your involvement in the film. The movie would be enjoyed by adults without small children. Pop your bowl of popcorn or have pizza delivered for this film. Chris, have you popped your bowl of popcorn or had pizza delivered?
I have not, but I just had breakfast.
Okay.
So.
I just had breakfast too, so that's going to have to suffice. Jay Farms 1956 is an example of someone who loved this movie.
So we are in agreement that this is definitely a 58-year-old man.
That's got to be true here. There's going to be some eye candy. It has apparently very little to do with Christmas.
Now, Matt, are you gonna call in your wife since there's eye candy for the guys and the girls?
My wife is not at home at the moment, but maybe...
I live alone. I could call over my Sailor Moon action figures, but that's as close as I'm going to get.
Maybe after we watch it, if I agree with this review, we'll watch it together for the eye candy for both the guys and gals.
All right, yeah, like a little romance time.
That's right. We'll light some candles. But, Chris, right now, you and I are going to have some romance time.
We're going to have a little romantic viewing of The Christmas Bounty.
We're going to watch The Christmas Bounty. This movie is available on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix account, you can go watch it right now with us. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take a break. You're going to hear a musical interlude by Michael Kill. And we are going to come back and talk about The Christmas Bounty. And we are back from watching The Christmas Bounty. That was not the movie I was expecting it to be, I have to say.
What were you expected to be?
Well, I remember the promos for this movie that aired on WWE television and ABC Family that made it seem like more of a traditional kind of heartwarming family Christmas movie. And this is really not that at all.
It's not. I will say, there are worse ways to spend an afternoon than watching The Christmas Bounty. I did not hate this movie.
Yeah, I think you were right. As we were watching the movie, you said, there's something in this movie for everyone. It's a comedy. It's an action movie. It's a romantic comedy. It's... got crime movie elements.
It's a crime drama. It's a rom-com. It's an action movie. It's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
There's a wedding. there's a brief car chase.
There's, like, cultural differences humor. Like, all that stuff is in here. And by virtue of that, by virtue of it being, like, a dozen genres, it does not commit that ultimate... sin, what we consider to be the ultimate sin on movie fighters. It is not boring.
Yeah, I will say I was never bored during this movie. I was
confused
during this movie, and I think this movie took a real bad turn at the end.
Yeah.
But it was never boring. There's always something. And I think some that has to do with this movie having what an 87 minute running time.
It is in that region as far as running time, yes.
It is not long. It is not a long movie because it has to fit into an ABC Family time slot.
I guess I have to get over my predisposition about what the Family Channel / ABC Family is, because I don't think it's been that for several years.
What do you think ABC Family is?
I always think of, like, very sappy... and very, like, scrubbed clean, squeaky clean content. But I know that ABC Family shows Pretty Little Liars.
Yes, and Teen Girl Murder Click.
They use the word bitch on that show Maybe more than any show on TV.
Even Monday Night Raw?
Even Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, they also, I mean, they also showed The Middleman, which was a very, very good television show that I enjoyed. But they are also, I think the 700 Club had a contract with the Family Channel.
Right.
That promised them a time slot in perpetuity. Because they still show the 700 Club.
Which is so weird. Because they're showing, you know, The Secret Life of the American Teenager and the 700 Club on this channel. But I just remember when it was the Family Channel and how super, super squeaky clean it was. And this movie has, for all intents and purposes, a strip club scene.
Yes. A weird strip club scene.
Yeah, and lots of stuff about the lead character, whose first name is Tornado.
Which is amazing. I should say, high point, favorite part of the movie, the main character's name is Tornado Bell.
She goes by Tori, but it's Tornado. Her mom is constantly talking about her breasts.
Which are large and prominent.
Yeah, she is clearly supposed to be a take on Dog the Bounty Hunter's wife. The
mom. Oh yeah, I did not put that together, but you are correct.
Yeah. As we said, she is B-level Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes.
Just like every actor in the last movie you watched, Gun Crazy, is a backup version of another actor, this movie has that same thing. Because The Miz and the actress who plays Tori, whose name is Francia Reza, are doing like a Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez thing in this.
They really, really are.
Even though it's not as bad as Geely. I'll give this movie that. And The Miz is also kind of doing a Mark Wahlberg thing
here. Yeah, well, because here's the thing. The movie is set in New Jersey, and that's the joke. Like, that everything is super Jersey. Like, they go to the mall, and they have the big hair and the outfits. You know, like they do in real-life New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But The Miz does not have a Jersey accent. The Miz, who is from Cleveland, is trying to do a Jersey accent, but he's doing a Boston accent.
Yeah, it comes out Massachusetts 100%.
Yeah, like there was something that he said that we both, at the same time, just repeated the line to each other.
Yeah.
That's what he said, and I can't remember what it was.
It was something like, he's going too fast! And, like, I did it more Jersey just now than The Miz did. Like,
get in the car! Yeah. He definitely had one of those Boston A, you know, AR sounds.
Yes. There's a character who is Tori's fiance, who is played by Will Greenberg, who is absolutely backup Seth Meyers.
Yes.
And then her dad, who is played by Michael Hannis, I think I figured out that he is played by backup the guy who played Crossbones in Captain America 2.
Seems right. Scott Patey plays Cousin Bones, who is like the tech expert on the family bounty hunting team.
Right.
And I feel like he is, like, that, if that role would not have had jokes about him being overweight, that would have been a DJ Qualls role.
That's pretty on point. Yeah. That is pretty on point. So do you want to just get into the plot of this movie as it is?
Let's do it. Because I am frustrated in this movie. Or frustrated with this movie in the way that I am frustrated with a lot of romantic comedies of the Nora Ephron school. But we will get to that.
Yes, that doesn't happen until literally the last 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, huge pain in the ass. But here we go. Here we go.
We start with a pageant at a school in Manhattan that, by all indications, is in the Empire State Building.
Yeah, the only establishing shots we get are the Empire State Building and then the interior of a school.
Yes. And so even though we see an exterior shot of the outside, which is clearly, one, not in the Empire State Building, and two, not in Manhattan, because there's like lots of open space and not buildings everywhere. However, the establishing shots clearly show that this school is in the middle of Manhattan. And what we see is Tori and her fiance walking around in the school's hall talking about the Christmas pageant and how it all just went down and how Tori was in charge of it.
We see her interacting with some kids, and then her fiance shows up. She's like, "Oh, hey, I didn't know you were on your way." And which is a weird thing to say. The setup for this conversation is so weird because she's like, "Oh, I didn't know you were on your way," or something that gives him an excuse to pull out his phone and say, "Oh, well, I told you to use this app that my company developed where you can see where I am at all times." And he shows her this map, and it's like a little map app. And it's got two hearts with their initials in it.
Right.
So that you can see where your lover is at all times. Which, if anyone is working on developing that app, or if that app actually exists, don't. Stop. Stop what you are doing. That is a terrible, terrible idea.
Well, first of all, there's already an app that does that. It's called Find My Friends, and Apple created it.
They should not do that.
Second, making it specifically about knowing where your significant other is the creepiest thing.
Yeah, like that's the problem with that. Like, if somebody's like, "Hey, let me see your phone for a second. I want to install this thing where I know where you are at all times and if you are on your way to see me." What's that? No, I'm totally normal.
Yeah.
This is a normal thing for couples to do. I'm certainly
not going to track your movements and try to predict and control where you go at all times.
So I see this and I'm like, "Oh, okay, I get it. He's going to turn out to be a bad guy." Like, obviously we know the Miz is in this movie, and the Miz is the second billed actor, so he's ostensibly the male lead after Tori. So I'm like, "Oh, okay, he's a weird control freak." But he is not. This app comes back two more times and is purely for plot convenience the first time. And the second time, they completely forget about what its actual function is until they remember it at the scene where they go, "Yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to work this time." This 100% reliable Find My Girlfriend app. But anyway, while they're talking about this play, a woman runs up and she can't find her son. And so they're like, "Oh, he's probably hiding in the classroom." So they go look, and Tori looks out the window and sees a man hustling this child into a car and getting ready to drive off. Which is some serious shit.
Very serious. She reacts to this by lying to her fiance, well, to her boyfriend, not fiance yet, to her boyfriend James, and saying, "Hey, I think I left my coat by the stage in the auditorium. Can you go get it for me?" So he runs off to go get the coat, and she jumps out the window and then jumps onto this man's car, rolls off the hood, falls down in front of the car, runs over to the driver's side, busts the door open, and like starts putting this dude in a chokehold.
She pulls him out of the car like it's Grand Theft Auto, which is impossible to do if he had been wearing a seatbelt, but it's a movie, so yes. She can do whatever she wants.
So immediately, the kid goes, no, that's my dad. She goes, "Oh, well, the teachers have been informed that you've lost your visitation rights, so you need to get out of here," and says to the kid, "You should go find your mom." The kid and the dad hug, and the kid goes like, "I'm sorry, Dad, I'll miss you."
No, he just goes, "I love you, Dad."
Oh, that's right.
And then hugs him and then runs away.
And it's like, couldn't you have made this dad that our lead character attacks right at the beginning of this movie a little more of an asshole?
They obviously don't want to go for what they're implying, which is that this guy is a abusive father who is kidnapping the son that he has been legally forbidden from seeing. Which, if the court revokes your visitation rights, you have fucked up real bad. like you have done something. But they obviously want to, like, this is her save the cat moment, right? This is her, she's doing something good so that we know that we can root for her. And this obviously kind of establishes her bounty hunting skills. But they obviously want to show her, like, softer side, and that she's not, like, You know, this is her resisting getting back into the bounty hunting life or whatever. Because what she does is she's like, hey, I'm not going to report this. Because if I'm the one who calls this in, you're going to go to jail. And it's Christmas, so you should call the police and just tell them what you did. And they'll probably go easy on you. But it's like, this dude is a kidnapper who is forbidden from seeing his child. They waffle. They establish that he's a kidnapper also who's been forbidden from seeing his child. But then he's like, oh, but he's probably just a good guy.
Well, he's also like...
He deserves a break.
Like, he doesn't look... Like, he doesn't look mean. His kid hugs him and says he loves him. Like,
he looks like an orthodontist.
He does. He's even driving the car of an orthodontist. It's a very strange way to set up the stuff they're trying to set up.
It's super weird. And so then, but then Tori goes back into school and she meets up with, what's his name? James? Boyfriend?
Yes.
Again, we just watched this movie. I don't know anybody's name except Mikey Muscles and Tornado and Cousin Bones. And she's like, oh yeah, he was just hiding under a desk, whatever. Now here's the thing: this is supposed to be Tori's save the cat moment. This is supposed to be us going, okay, Tori's a good person. We can get behind Tori. The first thing she does is lie to her fiance
twice about
something that is extremely reasonable, like. If she looks out the window and sees a kidnapping going down, and it looks like a kidnapping, because like when you first see the dad and his son, he's like, come on, hurry, get in the car, we gotta get out of here. And we've been told this kid is missing. Like, there is no reason for her to not go, hey, somebody's trying to kidnap this kid. I'm gonna go, you know, like, I'm gonna run and check that out. You call the police. Like, there's no reason for her to hide that information. Like, there's no one in the world who would be like, Tori, you're stopping a kidnapping, but I thought we were going to spend some time together.
But I think the implication is that when she, like, she doesn't want him to see her busting out the window and pulling her, like, jumpy bounty hunter moves.
Like, I realize that the premise of this movie is that Tori does not want people to know that she is a bounty hunter, but it is very excusable. To whatever you need to do to stop the kidnapping of a child, I think is perfectly acceptable in any situation.
Okay, that is barely the tip of the iceberg in terms of confusing things in this movie. The next scene is James and Tori going to a fancy party and meeting James's parents.
Yes.
It is rather uneventful. She meets his parents, they say, hey, what do you know about this girl? What do you, like, blah, blah, blah. Because they know that he's going to ask her to marry him. And this is the first time they've ever met her. And yes. So they're kind of just, like, a little skeptical of her. Just as they're meeting and talking, she gets a phone call from an unknown caller.
And she takes the call because she's in a real awkward situation.
So she runs off into another room. She takes the call. And the call that she gets is from a stereotypical Italian man who says, hey, I busted out of prison. I remember who caught me 6 years ago. I'm coming for you and your family.
6 years ago when she was presumably 14.
And she kind of says, oh, shit. And James runs into the room and goes, what's wrong? What's going on? And she goes, I have to leave the city. Don't follow me. I'll make everything up to you at New Year's.
Yeah, she's like, I have to leave. And he's like, oh yeah, I know this party is really awkward. And she's like, no, I have to get out of the city. Like, she tells him, yo, I have to go underground for a little bit. For the next few weeks. I gotta go to ground. I'm gonna go grab my go bag.
And his reaction to this isn't to say, what kind of shit have you gotten yourself into? It's to say, aw, but I wanted you to be here. She has to say, I'll make it up to you. Here's what we'll do if, you know, you just let me leave and I come back for New Year's. And then she whispers in his ear, and he goes, "You can do that?"
And she's like, "I can try." This is the part of the show where we speculate on what kind of filthy sex act she was promising.
It's butt stuff.
I think it's butt stuff. I think the most likely answer to that is butt stuff. I think it could be like, "I'll wear the pony ears."
You go straight to that. You're going straight to that after we watched two pony movies.
You're the one who wouldn't stop calling them pony girls.
We've been scarred for life by those movies.
It has to be something that would be difficult. So, I think butt stuff is a possibility.
You think they're going to do the vacuum cleaner?
I think it could be like, "I'll tie you down and kick you in the balls repeatedly."
He seems like he'd be the kind of guy who was into that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll get to the sequel to this movie that we've been writing towards the end.
He seems like the kind of guy who would love to be dominated, you know?
Yes.
He's a real pushover at the end of the movie, I'll tell you that. Tori gets out of town. She gets in a cab and is gone. She goes to her parents' house in New Jersey. And this is when we meet her parents. And look, I am all for diverse casting, right?
Yes.
I am happy that the lead actress in this movie is not white.
Yes, she is Latina.
Francia Reza is – actually, she's of Mexican and Honduran descent.
Mm-hmm.
So she is 100% Latina. She is not white. Her parents are as white as the day is long. They are so white. Her mom is bleach blonde. Her dad is kind of Italian-ish looking.
I would say he is at least presented as Jersey Italian.
Yeah.
Like, stereotypically Jersey Italian. Cousin Bones could not be whiter.
Oh, he is the whitest.
Yeah.
I guess she could pass as Italian, but not really.
Like, we talked about it in the in the mall scene, I was like, "Oh, she's like Italian in the way that John Leguizamo was Italian."
Yeah.
Got it.
I just don't understand why her bounty hunting family can't all be Latino.
Well, it's this weird thing. And again, it sounds like we're fixating on this, but the entire premise of this movie is that she has a super stereotypical Italian Jersey family. Like, they're the Sopranos, but they're bounty hunters, basically.
Right.
So it is, like, noticeable. it is a weird thing about this movie. Again, it is like casting John Leguizamo as Luigi Mario in the Mario Brothers with noted Italian actor Bob Hoskins.
That's right.
Those two play brothers. Italian brothers.
Yes.
Mario brothers.
We gotta watch that movie for Movie Fighters.
We do not have to watch that movie. People had their chance to make us watch that movie.
Fair enough.
And again, like I think if it wasn't for the fact that they're very obviously going for this weird stereotypical thing that is the basis of all the comedy in the movie, it would be, you know, I mean, it would be more than fine. Like it would be something we wouldn't even remark on. But it is super, super weird as presented.
And again, I don't entirely understand why she couldn't have a Latino family.
Yeah.
Who are also a Jersey family, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I do think, like, the only explanation for it, because she does not look like her parents at all.
No.
Like, I think she's adopted. She would have to be.
She would have to be. And they never mention it
because they love her as though – because she is their daughter.
Another weird thing is that their last name is Bell.
Yes.
But they're super, super Italian. Anyway.
They can't be super Italian because the super Italian names all go to the
mobsters.
The mobsters. Yeah. Like the bad guy whose name is Minucci.
Yeah. She shows up at her parents' house and says, "Hey, Minucci has escaped from prison. She's coming after us. So we've got to deal with this. We've got to do something."
Minucci has escaped from prison. Also, he has my cell phone number.
Somehow. I definitely should never have given him my cell phone number.
Definitely, during the trial, should not have said, "Hey, call me if you ever escape from prison, jackass.
And the joke of this scene is that they're extremely excited that she's home. And we're supposed to see how, like, stereotypical trashy they are. The problem with that is they have a very nice home. A very nice home. So they're not trailer trashy really at all.
They have a really, really nice house that has really over-the-top ostentatious Christmas decorations.
Yeah, but like, that's the only thing that's really gaudy about it. Like,
yeah, so they basically have the house I would like to own.
They have nice furniture.
They have nice furniture. It's a nice house. Interiors are really nice.
Yeah, it's not, like, badly appointed. They went a little overboard with their Christmas decorations.
It's like The Simpsons, right? Like, The Simpsons, Homer works at a nuclear plant when he bothers to go to work.
Right.
Marge doesn't have a job.
She's a homemaker, which is a job.
Okay, she is a homemaker. She does not bring in income.
Okay.
Generally speaking. And they have three kids. And they have that house.
Well, it's like my favorite thing in the Frank Grimes episode.
Yeah, the Frank Grimes episode where he calls it a palace.
Yeah.
Like, I remember they had, like, a contest where there was going to be this planned community, I think in Nevada, called Springfield. And they were going to build a replica of the Simpsons house. And if you could, like, win this house in a contest. And I remember my dad being like, that house is amazing. Like, I would love to own that house.
It stretches credulity that they would own that house, just like it stretches credulity that this family would own this house. I'm sure they make great money as bounty hunters, but they're wearing, like, tank tops, and the dad never wears sleeves.
Yeah, it is Christmas time, which is wholly irrelevant to the plot. It is Christmas time, and he goes outside in a leather vest and no shirt.
It establishes that they're this kind of, like, trailer trashy family, even though they have this great house. And the next thing that they do is they find out that Minucci's sister is going to be at the mall shopping.
They get a tip from the scriptwriter.
That's right. And so they say, oh, okay, we should go check that out. And then we can put a tracking device in her bag and she'll lead us to Minucci.
The tracking device that's the size of an iPhone.
It's gigantic. It's like the transponder from No Country for Old Men.
It's really huge.
So they go to the mall. Minucci's sister is there buying ostentatious shoes.
She just looks. There is a long scene where she is just holding this shoe and slowly rotating it and looking at it from different angles while smiling.
Yes, and like, the whole gag of that scene seems to be that Tori is clearly visible in the window of the store watching her look at this shoe, and the mobster lady never looks at her, like never notices her. Before that happens, we see the family assemble in the mall. They're posing as elves in the Santa display.
Well, the dad is posing as an elf. The mom, whose name is Gail... G-A-L-E. Their names are Gale and Hawk and Tornado.
It's like they're a tag team working under Freebird rules.
And as far as we know, these are their legal names. Like, there's one part where her mom calls her Tornado Renee Bell.
Yeah, her first name is Tornado.
Which is amazing. Yes. Amazing. But yeah, Hawk, Gale, Tornado, and Bones.
And Mikey Muscles.
And Mikey Muscles. Who, they are American gladiators.
Who Mike Mizanin shows up at the mall, and we discover that he's going to be working with them. He still works for Tori's parents, even though he and Tori broke up 3 years ago.
Yeah, he and Tori used to date, but because Mike the Miz, Mikey Muscles, is a bounty hunter working for her dad. But they no longer date, but he is still very much in love with her. And they have called him in to be her backup on this mission.
Because he still works with them. They still have a working relationship, even though they broke up.
Right.
That is how that is established.
Because she is out of the picture. She is in Manhattan teaching at Empire State Building Primary School.
That's right. There's all this stuff in the mall. The gangster lady is looking at shoes. She's getting her mustache waxed. She's getting her eyebrows done. She's getting a spray tan.
She has three bodyguards.
Of various ethnicities.
There is a white dude, a black dude, and an Asian guy.
Yep.
Again, we're fine with it. I'm just not sure how much ethnic diversity is in the Italian mafia. Like how much ethnic diversity you generally are going to find in Italian crime families.
Going by The Sopranos, the idea of a black guy being the hired muscle in the Italian mob is not too believable. Going by The Sopranos.
Historically, it seems like a very mono-ethnic organization.
But look, this is a movie on ABC Family, and they wanted to have actors of various races appearing in the movie, and that is great.
And that's great. And I do kind of like that this movie takes place in a post-racial alternate reality where they're all people. They all
where the
go
mob
together
is
in
like,
varying combinations.
Where the mob is like, we got to get some diversity in here.
Hey, listen, it looks bad on the books, is what I'm saying.
We're getting terrible PR. Anyway, the family systematically takes out her bodyguards.
And no one notices. There's one
where the Miz throws a guy to his seeming death off a balcony.
Yeah, he dumps him off a balcony. And the thing is, a couple of these things are like Assassin's Creed. Like, there's a part where one guy is standing near a cluster of Christmas trees, you know, like you see in the mall. And the dad, who's dressed as a Santa, comes out and chloroforms him and just drags him back into the trees.
Yeah.
So I'll give them that one. I will even give them the scene where the mom takes out a guy in a glass elevator by touching him. Like, she just kind of puts her hand on the side of his face and he slams his head into the side of the wall and is knocked out. And the setup for that, by the way, is that this dude is so super horny that he is staring at the mannequins at Victoria's Secret.
Yes.
Like, he's staring at the breasts of the mannequins at Victoria's Secret.
And then the mom is standing in line with the mannequins as if she is the next mannequin.
Yeah.
So the camera, like, pans over onto her cleavage after the cleavage of all the mannequins.
Yes. And so she lures the guy into an elevator, presumably with a promise of sex or at least breasts. I don't want anyone out there to be leading a life of crime. But I know that, you have situations, you know. You have circumstances. So if you are in a life of crime and you are listening to this episode of Movie Fighters and someone just kind of walks up and seduces you in the middle of a public place, that's a trap.
Yeah, that is a cop or a bounty hunter or something.
Or someone who knows karate that you killed their sensei.
Yeah.
Like it's a trap, guys.
So that's how that guy gets taken out. The Miz has a wrestling match with a guy.
Yeah, he straight up tries to put a guy in the sleeper hold. The guy escapes from the sleeper hold and they have a fist fight.
And the only thing that happens with the public noticing any of this is a guy walks by and he goes, "Is he okay?" And the Miz says, "Yeah, he just fell down.
He slipped."
And then he throws the guy over the balcony. Tori, who is still following around the sister, catches up to her at the salon. They get rid of the bodyguards. She goes into the salon. She says, "Hey, I just need to get my nails redone." And the girl at the counter says, "Okay, fine." Just as she's leaving, the girl at the counter, the mob lady walks out of her spray tan and wax job and all that stuff, does her stuff and leaves, and Tori starts following her. Just as Tori starts to follow her, a character who we'll see a lot of for the rest of the movie, Lizzie Legs, who is a nurse, she walks up and goes, "Tori, I haven't seen you in forever. Where have you been?"
She's Tori's old best friend.
Yes. And she starts exclaiming, like, "You're Tori. How was life not being a bounty hunter anymore and all that. Like, identifying her very clearly.
Yes.
The way that the mob sister responds to all of this isn't to go like, oh shit, and run away. It's just to like walk a little faster out of the salon. Now, despite being uncovered, despite having her cover blown by Lizzie Legs, the family surrounds the mob sister, puts that giant transponder in her bag without her noticing somehow, and sends her on her way. There's like a little bit of a confrontation, but that's all it is. Like, she does not get away. There is no consequence to Tori's cover being blown at all. And then after that, there's like a catch-up scene between Lizzie Legs and Mikey Muscles and Tori, where they establish a little more about Mikey Muscles having dated Tori.
Are we really going to call him Mikey Muscles? For the duration.
That's his character's name.
Let's just call him The Miz.
Okay.
What world are we in where The Miz is less silly than Mikey Muscles?
It's the world we live in.
I do like that Mike Mizanin is playing a character named Mike. That's always a great sign in a movie.
It's the Tony Danza approach.
Do you think The Miz is the new Tony Danza?
I hope he becomes the new Tony Danza. What if they remade Who's the Boss with Miz?
Oh, it would be amazing.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Now, we should note here, The Miz as a wrestler does not really tower over anybody.
He is not one of the larger wrestlers. He's not even one of the more muscular wrestlers. I mean, you know, obviously he's a pro wrestler. He works out. He's in great shape. And he's you see him standing next to, you know, Dave Bautista.
And Dave Bautista is a Hulk compared to him.
Yeah, yeah.
But in this movie, he is bigger than everyone by a large margin.
The same thing happened with Edge. Like, when Edge started showing up on TV shows after he retired, it's like, oh yeah, he's small for a wrestler. He is a foot taller than Tori, and much larger, and like he is very believable that his name would be Mikey Muscles.
Yeah, he's like still more than 200 pounds and a tall guy and like lantern jawed. I actually noticed as we were watching this movie how much The Miz looks like Christopher Reeve, which I'd never noticed on WWE.
It's the eyes.
I think you're right.
It's the eyes, but he's making weird faces throughout this movie.
Well, there's a few moments, and one of them happens in the mall, where he does, like, Mizzy promo thing. Yeah. Like, he's cutting a promo, not acting in a movie.
There's a couple instances in this movie where he gets into a really, really
catchphrases. There's one moment where Tori does it to him, and that's supposed to be the joke. But then later in the movie, he does it to her.
Yeah. Like, I want that to happen more. Like, if anyone's looking, do you remember when they did the WrestleMania that was in Hollywood, and so they did all the movie parody commercials for it?
WrestleMania 21.
Yeah. I want them to kind of adapt other wrestlers' catchphrases to movies. Like, I want John Cena fighting the Predator and getting covered in mud and then going, "He can't see me."
Like, you just gave WWE Studios an idea to make a Predator movie.
If, like, okay, it's not going to happen because Robert Rodriguez now has his own wrestling promotion, but if we could get, like, Predators 2 and it's only starring wrestlers, that would be the greatest movie of all time.
Okay, fast forward. There's another scene at the Bell's house that is ultimately forgettable. I don't even really remember what happens in that scene.
The only thing we talked about was that they have garlands on everything. Like, they have decorated everything in their house. Like, they have a computer with a garland on the monitor. And I was like, oh, I should do that.
Yeah.
That is delightful. But they find out that Minucci is hiding at a warehouse. And this is where this movie gets straight up racist.
He's hiding at a warehouse. So they go to the warehouse to try to get him. He is having dinner by candlelight in the middle of this warehouse. He's got a red and white checkered tablecloth on his little card table that he's eating on.
Yes.
He's got a candle in a red candle holder.
A red glass candle holder.
He's wearing a lobster bib. He's eating lobster and spaghetti.
And spaghetti. He has a bottle of Chianti in the little wicker wine bottle holder.
Yes. He could not be having a more stereotypical Italian mobster dinner.
Chef Luigi from The Simpsons should come out and be like, ah, Mr. Minucci. it was laughable.
And as he's eating dinner, the Bell family goes into the warehouse. This is the point where she tells Miz really. Tori tells Miz really. Because he's going to blow up the door. A locked
door with plastic explosive.
Yes, he puts an explosive on the door, sets it up to blow up, and just as he's like putting the wires in the charge, she like takes it off the door and goes, really? And opens the door with a hairpin.
A hairpin? She's wearing a scrunchie. She has like a ponytail in a scrunchie, and she has a hairpin for some reason in her hair.
I don't know. So they're about to take down Minucci, just as James comes walking in this abandoned warehouse in the middle of New Jersey, holding a stuffed bear and like a bottle of wine.
It's like the bear from Die Hard, from the opening of Die Hard.
And he goes, hey, Tori, I tracked you down using that app that we talked about earlier in the movie.
Okay, he does not say in the movie. The rest of that is dialogue. I tracked you down using that app we talked about.
I wanted to surprise you. Not, blissfully unaware that everyone standing around him has guns.
Yeah, and this is at a abandoned warehouse in Trenton, New Jersey.
Like, how did he even get in the building?
Yeah, the door was locked.
I guess he walked in. And he does not
come through the same door
that Tori does.
Tori and the Miz do. He comes through a different door, which was presumably not locked.
I do not know, but the bear's head gets shot off. His wine bottle gets blasted open. Minucci gets away, and Tori has to run over to save James.
And he faints.
Yeah, he falls out, drops out cold.
So he's like, did my bear explode?
This is where we should also note, everybody in this movie is a terrible shot. Nobody can shoot anyone ever. It's like G.I. Joe level accuracy, marksmanship. Nobody shoots anybody ever. And they're constantly shooting at each other.
And the Miz makes such a weird face while he's shooting. He's not a gun guy. I don't feel like the Miz is a hunter. I don't feel like the Miz has ever fired a gun before being on the set of this movie. And he's like just concentrating and bracing himself.
Tori and the rest of the Bell family take James back to their house and put him on the couch. As he's unconscious on the couch, Tori is telling her parents, please, before he wakes up, do everything you can to look normal. Mom, put your breasts away.
Actual line. Actually, the line is, put the girls away.
Well, her mom calls them the girls. Well, I don't remember.
She actually says, put the girls away, and the response is, well, I'll try, sweetie, but the girls ain't exactly shy.
That's right. But she, like, buttons up her shirt. She tells her dad to put on some sleeves. And the dad goes, no, no way. I am not wearing sleeves. And in what is actually a pretty nice moment, the mom goes, do it, honey. And he goes, okay. And he puts on a leather jacket.
He trades his leather vest for a leather jacket.
Which is kind of funny, like kind of really funny. They try to make themselves look a little more presentable. James wakes up. He sees the dad in this leather jacket and the mom like with a tray full of Ritz crackers that she's dumping Cheese Whiz on from a can onto the crackers. And they're trying to, like, be hospitable and be nice to him.
And this is where I said it's like this movie was made by people who only knew what poor people were like from cartoons.
Or sitcoms that aren't Roseanne.
Because they live in a really nice house and they put spray cheese on crackers.
Right. Just like, and they weren't putting spray cheese on individual crackers.
They have a plate of crackers that they are pouring spray cheese on.
It's just one giant heap of spray cheese on the tray on a few of the crackers, not all of them. So James wakes up and he's like, what is going on? Where am I? What's happening? And then he sees Tori and he's like, oh, Tori, thank God. What is going on? And she's like, well, James, these are my parents. This is where I grew up. And he goes, did that cheese come out of a can?
What?
But it's like, not only does this movie get its idea of poor people from sitcoms and cartoons, it gets its idea of rich people from sitcoms and cartoons, too.
Yeah, not only is James from the Upper East Side of Manhattan, not only does he work in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, he has never left the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
He says that the only thing he ever drinks is Cristal.
That's not what he says.
Well, he jokingly says, like, I'm getting tired of Cristal.
Yeah, because and this is the part where I'm like, oh, okay, it's going to be one of those movies. Because James is such a good guy.
He's very nice.
He's very nice, and he's up for everything. When they're like, oh, we should go to... They don't say Bellacino's. That's a restaurant in Colombia. But they say something like some Italian
name. It's a similar name. You think it's going to be an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the part of the movie where after he wakes up from being knocked out or passing out, he decides now is the time to propose to Tori.
Yeah, because that's what he came down to do.
So he pulls out the ring. He pops open the box and shows her the ring. And she says yes, she'll marry him. And so they pull out some cheap-ish looking champagne, and they say, we have to go celebrate now. So let's go to, let's just call it Bellacino's.
Okay.
I think that this is an Italian restaurant. But yeah, they start talking
like
about
it's
it.
An Italian restaurant.
They start talking about it being a dive bar.
Well, she goes, oh, I don't have anything to wear to Bellacino's. And her family's like, come on, yeah, you do. And he's like, let's go out and celebrate. Come on. It is something her family has suggested. So he's like, well, you know what? A dive bar sounds great because I'm getting a little tired of Cristal.
Yeah.
So he is like very much...
He's game for whatever.
Yeah. He is trying to interact with her family on their terms, which is a, like, it's a very nice thing for him to do.
So there's a scene where Tori has to go get dressed to go to Bellacino's, and she's got like all this leopard print shit out on the bed that her mom has,
like they wear in real life New Jersey,
that her mom has gotten out for her. She ends up wearing none of that. Like, her clothes were pretty normal looking in the scene in the bar, and they go off to the bar. It is neither an Italian restaurant nor is it a dive bar.
No, it's like a club.
It's a dance club. That sort of looks like a strip club. And this is the scene...
And it looks like a strip club because there's a stage on which two women in sexy schoolgirl outfits are dancing, sort of.
Kind of. So there's a scene where we discover that James has apparently never had beer before. Like, apparently they don't have beer in Manhattan.
I can confirm that is not true.
Because he orders... shots with a beer chaser.
Well, he tries to order champagne. Like, he's hanging out at the bar with the Miz, and he's like, hey, what do you want to drink? I'll get you a drink. And the guy says, well, I feel like champagne would be appropriate. We're celebrating my engagement. And he's like, champagne for my friend and a shot and a beer chaser for me. That might be the line that we said. Shot and a beer chaser. Say hi to your mom for me.
And James trying to be like, trying to act, you know, when in Rome, trying to act like the people around him. He goes, oh, all right, give me a shot and a beer chaser, as though he has never
heard. James probably went to college.
As though he has never heard those words before. And he's like, he tries them, he drinks them, he gulps them down, and he goes back over to Tori and he goes, hey, let me get you a shot and a beer chaser. It's pretty good. And it's just like, who is this guy? But he is super nice. The big goal of this scene is to show that Miz is still pining over Tori. He's still in love with her. Because they're dancing around and talking a little bit. And he's like a little bit bristly. Like he's really not being exactly, you know, friendly with her.
Yes.
And just as James like comes back over and starts dancing with her, he starts to leave. He starts walking out of the club. And Tori like goes and chases after him, and she's like, "What's wrong? What is going on?" And he basically tells her straight out, "I'm still in love with you. Like, you left, and I was still here, and I was still in love with you." And she gives him the "it's not you, it's me" thing. And he goes, "Oh, so that's that's what it's like being told that. I've used that a few times." And honestly, like, I get it. I understand the emotional place his character is coming from. But he is not being the guy that should win here.
He's really not. And also, it's been 3 years since they've seen each other. I get that there's a, he never got over her. He said, "I love you till I die." He's both passive-aggressive and aggressive-aggressive about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, bro, if, you know, she dumped you, then that's kind of the end of that story. Like, you know, she obviously does not want this life that she was living, so she changed her life.
She left.
Yeah.
She left because she didn't want to be a bounty hunter anymore.
Now, to be fair, she went like 20 miles away, if that. She went across a river.
Yeah.
To the Empire State Building. Which is where she works now.
At the school that's there.
It's this weird thing where it's like, okay, yeah, he's still in love with her. But, you know, they don't – there's never really a moment that they have where they reconnect, you know? This movie doesn't earn its ending in terms of these two characters.
No, and he's never more than just like a jilted kind of bitter lover, right? Bitter ex.
But he's not even like that bitter. But we'll get to the ending. But yeah.
He's never much more than like just kind of a smarmy guy who, like, honestly, the moral of this movie is, hey, don't punch above your weight class. If you were born into a, kind of a low class bounty hunter family, stick with them.
Yeah, listen, don't try to date a rich guy if you were not a rich girl.
Don't try for social mobility.
Yeah. And unless you're a guy.
Yeah. But, like, James, like, I'm not asking this movie to do the whole, like, rich jerk stereotype thing. Because, Lord knows, there are plenty of romantic comedies that have that type in them.
Yes.
But James is, in every way, demonstrably a great dude.
Like, yeah. Like, he is... He's nice. He's caring. He apologizes for his parents. All we see from Tori is like lying to James constantly. And I honestly thought that this movie was going to get to the point where it looks like it's going at the end and it was going to be nice. But it doesn't. They do the bar scene and then they find out, they get another tip from the scriptwriter that Minucci is hiding out at a Christmas tree lot.
Which makes no sense. There is no reason this next scene should take place at a Christmas tree lot. There is no reason for him to be there. Because later in the movie, he says, hey, I can't leave this warehouse because I'm an escaped convict. But for some reason that is never given, he is at a Christmas tree lot. It is strictly an excuse to have a scene at a Christmas tree lot.
Yeah, because otherwise this movie would just be called The Bounty.
Yeah.
There's a shootout at the Christmas tree lot.
Also, somewhere in here, Cousin Bones is introduced.
Cousin Bones is introduced. And he's introduced back at the – he gives the dad his leather jacket.
Yeah, and we find out that he's like – he wants to get out in the field and do field work. But the family doesn't let him go do it because he's fat.
I thought it was because he was young, but I mean, it's probably because he was fat.
And so he gets stuck at home doing desk work. I guess he does all the paperwork for the family or computer stuff or whatever. But it is somewhat important to know this because when the Bells show up at the Christmas tree lot, Cousin Bones and James show up there as well.
Right, because James wants to be a part of what he thinks, I guess, is like a family celebration, even though they already have two Christmas trees in their living room and every available space is covered with tinsel and garland.
And Cousin Bones wants to get out in the field and help with this operation.
Right.
So James shows up and sees Tori and Miz and the rest of the family in their bulletproof vests and badges. And still hasn't entirely put together that they're bounty hunters. He has seen the bounty hunter licenses in their house and hasn't put this together.
Yeah.
He's a doofus. He's a nice guy, but he's a doofus.
He is refusing to look at the evidence in front of him.
Maybe he's delusional.
He did take a blow to the head. And Lizzie the Legs said he was okay. But honestly, I'm not sure if I trust Lizzie the Legs' medical expertise. They don't call her Lizzie the Nurse.
There's a big gunfight shootout.
Also, when Lizzie the Legs is introduced, the Miz calls her Lizzie the Legs. And what does she say? She says, shaved, moisturized, and ready for action.
Yeah, which definitely made us think that in the first draft of the script, she was called Lizzie the Vagina.
James finally sees Tori using a gun. And he's like, Tori, what is going on? And she's like, I'm a bounty hunter. And he goes, you're a what?
Now, this is happening as Minucci and his gang are escaping in a van. And James decides that this is the point to pop his head out from some trees.
There is gunfire going on.
In the middle of gunfire, in between the criminals and the bounty hunters. He's like in the middle of them, popping his head out from a tree, asking her what her family does. And she says, oh, I'm a bounty hunter. More gunfire starts going off. And this part is pure hilarious. A criminal opens the door to the van, casually walks up to James, grabs him, and walks him back into the van. Like, I laughed very hard
at that moment. It is not even as intense as the father-son kidnapping that starts this movie.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, there's that guy. Let's get him. So they get him and put him in the van and drive away. And Tori is obviously very upset.
She is upset.
Her fiancé has been kidnapped. They get in Mrs. Camaro, his red 1997 Camaro, because he is supposed to be a guy from New Jersey, and they chase after the van for a while. And during this chase, Miz continues to be kind of a dick, because he spends the entire car ride saying, like, why wouldn't he have hit the ground? I mean, he's got a point.
Yeah, no, he has a point, but, like, he is critiquing the script at this point.
Yeah, he's saying, like,
Why did that guy pop his head out and want to have a conversation when there was fucking gunfire going on?
Yeah. Why wouldn't he hit the ground? Wouldn't a normal person hit the ground when they heard gunfire instead of trying to have a conversation and sticking their head out? So he has a point, but he's kind of being a jerk about it.
And Tori's reasoning for this is like, hey, he's not from this life. It's yeah. Like, well, if he's not from this life, then he should definitely hit the ground when he hears gunfire.
By the rules of this movie, James grew up in a tube where he never saw or encountered anything.
He has never left the Empire State Building. The first act of this movie takes place entirely in the Empire State Building.
So they try to chase after the van for a while, and eventually the Miz swerves off the road, and they lose him. So they go back to the Bell's house, and they're trying to figure out what could be going on.
Where could he be?
Where could he be?
Now, fortunately, Tori has an app on her phone that tells you exactly where your lover is. Even if one of them is in Manhattan and the other is in an abandoned warehouse in Trenton, New Jersey. So obviously, this app is some pretty serious stuff. It's not just for like when your person's across town. It crosses state lines.
Yeah, it uses global positioning.
Yes, they don't use that. No. Instead, it suddenly becomes a mystery.
Yes, and Tori...
And we get a little Sherlock moment.
Tori stands in her parents' living room and goes, bejeweled white shoes, eyebrow waxing, mustache waxing.
There was a white gazebo in that warehouse.
There was a gazebo in the warehouse. Tanning. They're having a big Jersey wedding.
And I know it as a Jersey wedding.
Yes.
In unison with Lizzie the Legs, who's there.
And she determines that this wedding has to be taking place in that warehouse where she saw the gazebo. Because once you put a gazebo together, you don't move it.
Right, exactly.
At that exact moment, she gets a text from Minucci.
It's a little Snapchat from Minucci.
That says, hey, we've got your boyfriend, we've got your fiancé, if you didn't already know that, and here's where he is.
So, it doesn't say here's where he is. I think they just send her a picture of the fiancé.
But she knows they have him. They're expecting them to show up at the warehouse. All that sleuthing was for nothing. Because Minucci and his people want them to come to the warehouse during the wedding. Also,
because then we see her using the app to find his phone.
Yes, they go to the warehouse, they bust in, as the wedding is preparing. There's a scene between...
Tori and Lizzie call it a Jersey wedding. I don't know why they don't just call it a wedding.
There's a scene where Minucci and his sister are getting ready for the wedding. And it's actually, like, kind of a nice scene between brother and sister.
It's very sweet. She's like, hey, thanks for coming to my wedding. And he's like, yeah, it's not every day that I get to see my little sister get married. I'm just sorry that we have to have it here instead of someplace nice because I escaped from prison and I can't be seen in public.
Unless it's at a Christmas tree lot.
Right.
And she goes, I love you. I'm glad you're here. Because nobody else in our family can be here because they're all either dead or in prison. So I'm extremely happy that you're here.
Yeah, which is weird because it is a packed wedding.
Yeah, it really is. I just have to ask you no business during my wedding. I want my wedding to go without a hitch. I don't want any kind of funny business happening here. Can you promise me that? And he goes, absolutely. Even though he has set it up so that the Bell family will be there right as the wedding is starting. None of this makes any sense at all. It is strictly there so that the action scene can happen in the middle of a wedding.
Why did he taunt the bounty hunter who put him in prison with a phone call 3 days before this wedding that he wanted to be at? The only thing that we can think of is that Minucci actually doesn't want his sister to get married, does not approve of her union. We never see her husband, by the way.
No, we don't. We don't see who she's getting married to. But yes, the only thing that makes any sense at all is that Minucci broke out of prison with two goals in mind. One, to, I guess, kill the Bell family. And two, to ruin his sister's wedding. Completely. Because that's what he accomplishes the second one. And he seems to have planned it out so that the second one will happen.
Yes. So we get a big action scene. The Bell family is really stoked because everyone attending this wedding has a bounty.
Yeah. And they like
is
read
a wedding
out
of wanted criminals.
They read out what the bounties are on the different people who are there. One of them looks exactly like Charles Bronson.
It's so weird. He does look exactly like Charles Bronson.
Tori and Miz track down James's phone, even though Tori knows full well they wouldn't have let James keep his phone.
Yeah.
So they track the phone to an empty room where it's just sitting on a chair.
Where a guy walks in with a gun drawn and then allows both of them to turn around and pull out their guns.
Yeah, and he goes, why would you think we would let him keep his phone? Which they clearly didn't. I don't know why they go after his phone at all. They should just search the building for him.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's a standoff between Miz and Tori and that guy. And just as the wedding is getting started, gunshots go off. Miz and Tori come running out of the room, because apparently nobody got shot in that standoff where everybody was standing 5 feet away from each other.
Yeah. No, like, the next time we see all of those characters, they are not together at all. And I have no idea how they all had guns on each other. Unless they were like, no, what do you say? We just all put down our guns and go our separate ways.
Nobody gets shot ever. ever.
Oh, wait, there's also a gun check, because
yeah.
Big Donna, the sister of Manucci, Big Donna Manucci, has insisted that there's no guns and no business at the wedding. So there is a, like, coat check girl with, like, tickets taking people's guns and hanging them on a, like, a coat rack, which is actually a pretty funny gag, except they use the same shot twice.
Yeah. And that is later used to show why none of the mobsters have guns, because there's a scene where the Mom Bell, just, like, pushes away the gun check and hides it somewhere.
Yeah.
So that none of them have guns. There's a big gunfight that takes place in the middle of the wedding. We get at least 5 different cutaway shots to Big Donna saying one-liners.
And Manucci,
about the wedding being ruined.
There are so many unrelated one-liners. The only one I can really remember is when the gunfire first starts and Manucci tries to calm down the curtain and goes, "Don't worry, it's just a small caliber," which I think is actually a pretty funny line.
The ones that Big Donna gets are really generic and badly delivered.
Yeah.
As if they were just having her rattle them off one after another without doing second takes on any of them.
Well, this is when they brought in Judd Apatow.
Yeah, that's right. Because the one I remember is her going, "I am going to kill my brother." And that is how it's delivered. The gunfight all coalesces. The Bell family managed to round up most of these wedding attendees, these gangsters, in front of these two big bay doors. And they are holding them. There's got to be, 25 or 30 of these people?
It is a very crowded wedding.
They are holding them there. The mother has a handgun. The dad has a shotgun. And is, standing on top of a staircase. And somehow these 40 mobsters are not, rushing the two of them and taking their guns away. They're just standing there calmly.
You got us.
While that's happening, Tori is chasing after Manucci. They get into a big fight on the top of a structure inside the warehouse. Tori kind of gets the better of him, kicks his gun away, and knocks him off the top of that structure, and looks like she's going to have him dead to rights. But Manucci whistles and 2 of his guys come out and they start leading Tori and James away. They got him. They finally got him. And I don't know why they don't just kill her now. They have several opportunities to just kill Tori and they don't do it. Instead, they walk out the door and they start walking away. Tori sees Miz standing on the roof of the building. And she turns to James and she goes, "On 3 fingers, duck."
Yeah, she goes, 3 fingers, duck.
She sticks out 1 finger, sticks out a 2nd finger, sticks out her 3rd finger. They hit the ground. Miz does a from the top rope power move off the roof, jumps off the roof, jumps onto Manucci, and knocks him out cold, and his henchmen.
He gets in a fight with the henchman, and it is the Miz, who again is the biggest, most muscular dude in this movie in a walk by a long shot, who is fighting this he was the fake Chi McBride of the movie.
Right.
But with 100 pounds on Chi McBride. I feel like it should not have taken the Miz that long to beat this guy up, but he is occupied with him for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, and that has to be happening so we can see Tori fight Manucci more.
Right.
So there's more and more fighting. Miz finally takes down fake Chi McBride. Tori takes down Manucci. She handcuffs him, so it is immediately over. Once she gets those handcuffs on him, the Bells win. The mobsters that were being held by those bay doors get to escape because they have to open the doors so that Tori can drive a car through it to chase Manucci at one point.
A bunch of people run away.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if the Bell family gets their $100,000 Christmas from apprehending all these criminals or not. Although I suppose they do. They buy motorcycles at the end.
Yeah. So they get apprehended. Minucci gets apprehended. There's that scene where, like, the cops arrive and everybody's getting rounded up. And Tori and James are standing there and going, like, James is, like, sitting on the edge of a ambulance getting treated. And Tori starts breaking up with him right here, right now. And saying, like, look, I thought that this was not the life I wanted. But as it turns out, this is what I want to do. I don't think I'm ready to stop being a bounty hunter yet. And I need you to – you're just going to have to go back to Manhattan and live your life. And I need to go back to this. I need to go back to my family.
Well, and he says, like, before she does that, he's like, hey, I really wish you would have been honest with me. Because we could have avoided this entire situation if you'd just been honest with me. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of wondering if there was anything else you lied to me about. Which is a reasonable reaction from a man who just got kidnapped and held at gunpoint. And he's like, but I'm still in love with you. Like, I still want to get married. I still want to be with you. Even though your lies got me kidnapped.
And she totally breaks it off with him. And his response to that is, okay. He does not fight for it at all. He's just like, all right.
Yeah, he's like, I'll miss you.
Yeah. So Tori runs over, jumps on top of a police car, jumps over the police car, jumps onto the Mrs. Camaro, onto his windshield, like rolls off the windshield and pops open Miz's door and starts hardcore making out with Miz.
Like, wraps her legs around him. Like, they look like they are straight about to fuck in the parking lot of this abandoned warehouse.
And it is not earned at all. Miz has done nothing to earn this.
Oh, but we forgot about this part. Before she goes and talks to James, she talks to the Miz. And the Miz is like, hey, I know you don't think I've changed at all, but I have. Like, when you left, it really kind of snapped me out of the funk I was in. I'm going to college now. I'm in pre-law. I'm going to try and make something of myself besides being a bounty hunter. And I'm still in love with you. And, you know, he gives her this romantic speech about how every time he sees her, it's like the first time he's seen her. He's super in love with her. And he's like, but I know there's another guy who is just as much in love with you as I am. And I know you love him. So go to him. Like, he finally, like, backs off. And it turns out that is what gets him laid in a parking lot.
Yeah, that's apparently what Tori likes. Tori likes for her guys to be pushovers.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay, so the Miz is obviously going to end up with Lizzie the Legs. And our two ostensible romantic leads, the only people who have had any indication of having a romantic connection in this movie, are going to get back together. That's nice. And then they don't. They don't at all.
So then there's, like, one epilogue scene at the Bell's house where we find out that Papa Bell bought motorcycles for the family. Tori and Miz kiss again. Credits roll, and we see, like, a credit sequence where Miz and the actress who played Tori, Francia Reza, dance in that club set. That's a wrap on Christmas Bounty.
The last thing we see is James going, that's a wrap on Christmas Bounty.
All right, Chris, high points of Christmas Bounty.
It's hard to figure out a high point because there's nothing that stands out as being exceptional. This movie is very kind of a five from start to finish, you know?
Yeah, I will say there are parts that are sort of funny.
There are a couple of good jokes.
Yeah. The acting is not awful.
It's not, but it's also like if you said, hey, we're about to watch a ABC Family original Christmas movie, it is exactly what you would expect.
Yeah. I think the actor who plays James is pretty good.
He's okay.
I think Francia Reza is fine.
She's good. She's good.
I think the actors who play the parents are good at what they have been tasked with doing. Like, none of the acting is actively bad. with the exception of some of Miz's overacting in places. And his
he does go a little over the top.
I'll say this. Okay, I think Tori, as a romantic comedy lead character, is like a refreshingly, you know, tough and self-sufficient lead character. It's not her who gets kidnapped. It's her fiancé.
Yes, that's nice.
She gets into fist fights with a giant mobster who has 150 pounds on her, if not more, and holds her own in those fights. She's certainly got flaws as a character. And there's certainly
a lot of flaws as a character.
Certainly parts of her that are not very well written. But I think it's refreshing that she's portrayed as tough as she is.
Yeah, I think that's good. She does end up getting rescued by the Miz at the end, but not in a way that I think, because she gives herself up to the bad guy.
And it's also, you know, it's also, right, she gives herself up to the bad guy because she gets put in a situation where it's either you come with me or I kill your fiance.
Yeah.
The person who's still, like, the bargaining chip is James. Low points of Christmas Bounty.
Look, I hate to say it. I really hate to say it. The Miz.
Well, his accent is pretty rough. He overacts.
He's got weird faces all the time. His Boston accent is weird. The face that he pulls in gunfights is hilarious. But yeah, distracting is the word for it.
Another low point, I think, is the portrayal of mobsters.
You're going to have to explain that one.
Well, just how, like, cartoonish stereotypical it all is.
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, this movie is so weird, though, because it is clearly in a bizarre cartoon reality where there can be a guy who has never left the Upper East Side of Manhattan, which I find unlikely.
Yeah, James's naivete is the worst thing about his character. It's just like Tori constantly lying is the worst thing about her character.
Tori's character is really bad. Like, Tori's character is really hard to like, which is a real big flaw in a romantic comedy where we're supposed to be rooting for her to get the guy she's in love with. James is, and again, I don't want James to be a scumbag, but like, he's a little too nice.
And extraordinarily naive.
Extraordinarily naive. Clearly in love with Tori and does nothing wrong, to the point where he's apologizing for his parents and it is fully into doing whatever it takes to get to make her parents comfortable with him. Which, again, that's not saying he just deserves Tori by default, but neither does the Miz, you know, which, like, what does the Miz do other than have zero chemistry with Tori?
Other than be from her past, and she decides she wants to go back to her past. You know?
Other than be a guy she's grown up with.
Yeah. It's like, at the end of the movie, she just decides to revert or regress, you know? Like, that's all that happens.
It's one of those movies where, you know, she has a talent. She has a gift that she's been trying to deny. But that gift is bounty hunting.
Yeah.
And also, like, she seemed to be a good teacher. Like, the little we saw of it, like, the kids seemed to like her.
Yeah. Like, what's going to happen at that school?
Well, if that was going to happen to the school, that dude is going to kidnap his son. Yep. Because no one will stop him.
That's what's going to happen. One more low point, the music.
Oh, the music's amazing.
Which is just all royalty-free, public domain music library selections.
It's so close to being a high point. It's so bad that it's almost a high point.
You said that the music all sounded like it was composed by WWE composer Jim Johnston.
Yes.
And that is fully accurate. Okay, final thoughts about the Christmas Bounty.
There are worse ways to spend an afternoon, but this is not a great movie. There is a sequel to this movie that you and I were writing towards the end.
It's waiting to happen.
Because there is a part at the end of the movie where Tori is talking to James, And James is like, yeah, I certainly never been kidnapped before, but it was kind of a rush. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, now that he has been dumped by Tori, this dude is just going to be like putting cigarettes out on his hands, like starting fights in biker bars just to feel something.
I think the logical sequel is James is the villain of the movie, right?
I think it's like a tragic fall from James.
But I think that like he should commit some crimes and then, you know, there's a bounty out on him. Maybe the bounty is out on, like, it's not his real name. Like he's known as, like, the upper crust killer or whatever.
The scorpion.
Yeah. And so the Bell family, like, goes after the upper crust killer, not knowing who he is, and then it turns out to be James. And then Tori has to deal with that. She has to deal with this monster she created.
Yeah, and he's just like, she's like, why did you kill all those people? And he's like, they weren't living life. They were like I used to be.
I
set them free, Tori. Like, listen, you set me free.
I want to thank you. Thank you for letting me live my life. For once, I've escaped Manhattan and lived.
Oh, man. Like, I would be so into the Christmas Bounty, too.
If it was this movie.
Yeah. Like, the Miz gets kidnapped.
I think the Miz should die in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, man. No, because, like, we need to fix this movie in the sequel. So, it needs to be that this is where the Miz, like, where we actually get the romance between them.
Okay.
That comes from him being kidnapped by her ex-boyfriend and, like, cut up.
Maybe the dad dies in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, man. Maybe Cousin Bones.
Yeah, let's make it Cousin Bones.
It's like G.I. Joe 2, where all of G.I. Joe died in, like, the first 10 minutes. So her entire bounty hunting family dies.
And then it's just revenge after it's just that.
Yeah, she goes on revenge. Like, but they don't find the Miz's body.
Yeah, and the wrestler who appears in the second one is like Bad Roman News Reigns. Barrett. Roman Reigns, yeah. Roman she Reigns. Meets Roman Reigns, who is basically Renegade. And they go off together.
Like,
and
there's an explode. Like, she's coming home to see her parents for Thanksgiving, because it's going to start on Thanksgiving. And, like, she pulls up in the driveway, and the house blows up. And, like, the next scene is her talking to the police, and they're like, yeah, it was C4. It wasn't a gas leak. It was definitely an explosion. We found this in the driveway, and it's a shot glass and a beer stein. She's like, a shot and a beer.
My or God. it could be a phone that has that app.
That has that app? Oh, man. And then it's like 12 rounds.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it. Christmas Bounty 2 and 12 Rounds 3 are the same movie.
WWE Films.
It's called the 12 Rounds of Christmas.
WWE Films. We have just pitched you Christmas Bounty 2. Get back to us. This has been this episode, one of our holiday special episodes of Movie Fighters. Go to our website, which is moviefighterscast.com. That's where you can stream the show, download the show, and leave comments. Be sure to check us out on iTunes, which if you search for Movie Fighters on iTunes, you'll find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review. The more good reviews we get, the more we're featured. Our theme song is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Baugus. We will be back in 2 weeks with another holiday classic. Until then, everybody, thank you for listening, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Media production.